Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Shkalim, daf Yud Zayin. We are on Tez Zayin, very bottom of Tez Zayin, Amud Aleph. Yesterday's daf was dedicated to the discussion of the Aron. The entirety of yesterday's daf was a discussion of how big the Aron was, what was in the Aron, which, by the way, we haven't even gotten to yet. That's where we're going to do that today. We're going to start off with today. And a discussion of the Gnizas Aron, who hid the Aron. So all this is was part of yesterday's daf. Let's complete yesterday's daf. Let's move on to today's daf. The Sha'arim, the gates of the Azara, which I have the board behind me, which will be very helpful for today. All right, first off, discussion from yesterday's daf. Who hid the Aron? So who was responsible for hiding the Aron? So the Gemara says Yoshiel. Yoshiel was one of the last kings of Malchi Yehuda. Malchi Yehuda extended from David HaMelech to basically Yoshiahu. His sons... We'll credit his sons for being the last of Malchi David during Bais Rishon. We'll discuss the sons in just a moment. But Yoshio was basically the second to last generation of the Malchi Yehuda, and he knew that the impending destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and he knew that if the Nebuchadnezzar and Babel got their hands on the Aron, they would never see it again. So therefore, he put in Gnizah, he put in hiding. Where exactly did he hide it? So we don't know, obviously. That information is not known to us, but the Mishnah gave us a clue. The Mishnah yesterday, the first Mishnah in the sixth parak of Shkalim, told us that it's probably here, in the Lishkas HaEitzim, one of the courtyards, one of the chambers that was in the Ezros HaNashim, where they stored the wood in order to put on top of the Mizbeach, so it was in under there. Now, how do I know that? So I don't, first of all, but what clues do I have towards that? So the clues that I have is that the Mishnah says that there was a Kohen who was noticing, looking at the floor and seeing a tile was a little bit off and realized, hey, something must be buried underneath over there. He was about to tell somebody and he died on the spot. So the that was the Mishnah we saw yesterday. So the Mishnah told us that that it was hidden in the Lishkas HaEitzim. The Gemara tells us that it was Yoshio who hid it. We have no reference of that in Tanakh. In Tanakh, we will not see who hid the Aron, but the Gemara says, based on Psukim, based on darshaning of Psukim, it's part of the Torah Shabbat Peh that we have Yoshio, who is the one who was responsible for hiding it. We took a little bit of a detour yesterday in the Gemara, because the Gemara mentioned that in addition to hiding the Aron, he hid four other items. He hid the Tzimtzenes HaMan, the jar of Man, Tzuchus Shemen HaMishcha, the anointing oil that was prepared by Moshe Rabbeinu, Maklos Aron Uperacha Vishkei Dav, the staff of Aron, and the end of Parshas Korach, and Argosh Yeshiva Plishtim Asham Lelekei Yisrael, and the chest that was prepared by the Plishtim when they returned the Aron and the Sefer Torah to us. Okay. So those are the other things that he hid. So the Gemara just took a little bit of a detour yesterday, where the Gemara told us about the Shemen HaMishcha, how was the Shemen HaMishcha prepared, Machlokas Tanayim, in terms of how the Shemen HaMishcha was prepared. We know that there were 1,500 mana of spices that were used, four different spices that are actually mentioned in the Torah. 1,500 mana, how do you prepare an oil fragrance by 1,500 mana when the oil itself is only 12 log? It's not a lot of oil. So the Gemara, you had that discussion, debate yesterday between the Tanaim, how exactly it was prepared. It was done nace. It was either prepared by nace or it was prepared the way that the perfumers do it. That was a machlokas. And then what was done with the Shemen HaMishcha was used to anoint the Mishkan, the Kalim, the Kohen Gadol, the Melech. And the Gemara says, and there was still plenty to go around. Now, obviously, that was another miracle. If there's only 12 log and I'm applying it for the purposes of anointing, even if I just apply a little bit, but there's no way that 12 log can be used and reused and reused for all these items. So the Gemara says that was another miracle, that we never ran out of Moshe's Shemen HaMishcha that he compounded, that he put together. Okay, that all was a quick recap of what we did yesterday. We're on Tez Zayin Amud Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. Ein Moshkin HaMalachim. Okay. Yesterday we noted that when after he hid the Shemen HaMishcha, so they had to use some sort of substitute oil, you know, for Mishicha. The Gemara referred to it as a farsimon oil, right? I don't know how to translate that into English, but basically some sort of substitute oil was used once the Shemen HaMishcha was gone. Okay. We continue in the Gemara. Ein Moshkin HaMalachim Ela Min HaKeren. Okay, that's where we left off yesterday? Okay, good. You don't do Mashicha on a king except from a horn. So in other words, it has to be, the oil has to be poured into a horn, and from there, the king is anointed with the oil coming out of the Karen. Shal v'yehu nimshachu min hapach, ha'isam al-chusam achus haveres. Shal and Yehu were nimshach with a jug, meaning not a horn, but rather just a jug. And therefore, the malchus was overus. It was a passing malchus. It was temporary. But David and Shlomo nimshchu min haKaren ha'isa malchusam melch kayemes. But David and Shlomo, who were anointed with a Karen, so therefore their malchus continues. Ein moshkin kohanim malachim. The ein moshkin kohanim malachim. We're going to have to work on the gears a little bit. Okay. Okay, right. Okay, no. Let's stay with the Gersa. Okay, I apologize. Ain Moshkin Kohen and Malachim. Kohen can't be a Malach. Okay, there's a famous, because I know it. There's a famous Ramban on Chumash. Ramban on Chumash in Parshas Vayechi. So he writes that the story of Hanukkah, which is coming up, we're just today is the first day of Kislev, so 25 short days from now, we're going to be celebrating Hanukkah and the miracle of the Chashmonaim. And the Ramban says it was wonderful. I mean, in other words, they risked their lives to save the Jewish people to defeat the Greeks. And then the Ramban on Chumash says, but the story doesn't end off so well, meaning it's not a storybook ending. The Ramban says that what they then did after they defeated the Greeks and they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash is then they assumed the kingdom, the monarchy of the Jewish people. And the Ramban says that was not right. Now, how does the Ramban know that that was not right? So presumably our Gemara right here. Our Gemara right over here speaks to this idea that the kings cannot come from Kohanim. Kohanim are a spiritual leadership position, and the kings are spiritual, the kings are, you know, follow the Torah, obviously, but in other words, the kings cannot come from the Malchei, from the families of Kohanim. So the Ramban is critical on the Chashmonaim, right? They saved us, we celebrated. In other words, he's not, criticism is supposed to be understood in a certain context, but still, in that context, he writes that it did not have a storybook ending. So anyway, so our Gemara, right here in the Yerushalmi, says, Ein Moshkin Kohanim Malachim, the Kohanim cannot be anointed as kings. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Anto Daira, Al Shem Lo Yasur Sheva Miyehuda. It's based on the Pasuk in Parshas Vayechi. You look at that Pasuk, and then you look at the Ramban and that Pasuk, and the Ramban over there writes more or less what I just told you. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ad, Alaman Yarich Emim Amalachtohu Vanav Bekarev Yisrael. So another pasuk speaking to this idea that his days will be lengthened. Hu v'nav an kerev Yisrael maksi basrei, and the pasuk says afterwards lo yiyah la kohanim levim. This is not for the kohanim levim. They are not to become the kings of the Jewish people. So two sources that speak to this idea that kohanim should not become the kings, either from Parshas Vayechi or Parshas Shoftim. Either way, the Gemara here in the Yerushalmi is very clear: the kohanim cannot be the kings. And again, see the Ramban on Parshas Vayechi, where he speaks about this at length. I'm Rav Yochanan, who Yehoahaz. Now, just a brief history lesson. Yoshiyahu was the second to last generation of Malchei Yehuda. Okay, after Yoshiyahu, there are going to be four kings. But of those four kings that follow him, three of them are his sons, and then one is a grandson of Yoshiyahu. But in other words, and it doesn't go in the order of chronology or genealogy in terms of who assumed the position after him. So the Gemara now is going to point out that we have a pasuk in Divrei Yamim. The pasuk in Divrei Yamim lists four sons of Yoshio, but like we do often in the pasuk in Divrei Yamim, we don't understand them super literally. Even though the pasuk describes that Yoshio had four sons, we're going to understand that really they are three sons in total to Yoshiyahu. Each one of them assumed the monarchy of the Jewish people for a certain amount of time, and they are, well, before I get to who they are, what Rav Yochanan tells us is, interesting, Rav Yochanan is the one telling us this, that Yochanan and Yehoahaz are the one and the same, even though, right, the names are similar to one another, they're the same person. So the Gemara says, V'haksi v'habachor Yochanan b'chor l'malchus. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have a pasuk in Divrei Yamim that says that the Bechor is Yochanan, who is Bechor Lamachos. I'm Rav Yochanan, who is Shalom Utzidkiyahu. So the Rav Yochanan says that Shalom and Tzidkiyahu are one and the same. V'haksiv ha-gimel tzidkiyal v'rivi shalom. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's a little bit strange, because again, going back to Divrei Hayamim, Divrei Hayamim mentions four sons to Yoshiyahu. Son number three, tzidkiyahu. Son number four, shalom. So the Gemara says, gimel otolos dal lamach. So the Gemara says again, don't understand the psukim Divrei Hayamim super literally. It means Yoshiyahu only had three sons. And when it says that the fourth one was Shalom, and he's identifying Shalom and Tzidkiyahu as the same person, what he means by that is that he was number four in terms of being the king after Yoshiyahu. So in other words, after Yoshiyahu was the king, it was in order Yehoahaz, who also goes by the name of Yochanan, then Yehoyakim, who was his older brother, remember that was yesterday's daf, then a nephew, Yechanya, which we'll get to in just a moment, and then back to Tzidkiyahu, the third son of Yoshiyahu, who ends up becoming now the fourth king after Yoshiyahu. Okay, hopefully all that was clear, but in other words, Yoshiyahu has three sons, they all served as kings after the death of Yoshiyahu, and not in the order of how they were born. First it was Yehoahaz, who was the same as Yochanan, who was 2 years younger than Yehoyakim. Next was Yehoyakim. Next was Yechanya, who was a nephew. And next was Tzidkiyahu, who also went by the name of Shalom. So now, just in terms of the last king of Yehuda, Tzidkiyahu, should Tzidik alav midas adin. So number one, he was referred to as Tzidkiyahu because he was Tzidik hadin. He accepted upon himself the midas hadin that was meted out by Kadosh Baruch Hu because it was during his reign that the Beis HaMikdash was finally destroyed and the Jewish people were finally dispersed. Shalom should be yamav shama machus beis David. And shalom over here does not mean in the sense of peace, but shalom means in the sense of nishlam, concluded. The kingdom, the Judean kingdom was concluded in his day. Lo shalom havashma, I'm sorry, Reish Lakish Amar, we have in parentheses, okay, maybe take it out, either way. Lo shalom havashma v'lo tzikiyo havashma ela metanya. So the Gemara says, the truth of the matter is they're both nicknames. They both don't really reflect his real name. His real name was Metanya, but he went by the name of Tzidkiyahu, he went by the name of Shalom for the reasons that we went on to just explain. Because it's Tzidik Hadin, because of Tam v'Nishlam, the conclusion of Bayis Rishon and the Malchus Yehuda. Hadao dechziv v'yimloch melch bavel et Metanya dodo tachta v'yaseh v'shmo Tzidkiyahu. So the Gemara says, and now we understand Pshat in the Pasuk in Malachim, where the Pasuk in Malachim describes Matanya. Who's he? Where did he come from? Answer is, he's Tzidkiyahu. He's Shalom. He's one and the same person. I'm Rav Yochanan. Okay, Adkan. Meaning, so that takes us now to the end of the discussion of the slight tangent in terms of the Malachim. And the reason why we got into the topic of Malachim is because we talked about the Shemin HaMishcha. Kings are anointed, but only the beginning of a dynasty. Once you are at the beginning of a dynasty, you anoint the king, but Melech ben Melech does not need anointment unless there's a machlokus, and the machlokus needs to be resolved. Then we'll take out the Shemin HaMishcha, but otherwise we don't. By Kohanim, in contradistinction to the Kohanim, that's not true. By Kohanim, even if you're a father, grandfather, great-grandfather, you can go back 10 generations. Even if they're all Kohen Gadols, it's not an assumed position. You have to earn the position. It's a meritocracy for Kohen Gadol, although in the Second Temple it wasn't. But wait till we get to Yuma, where we're going to be discussing that in more detail. But so, therefore, when it comes to the Kohen Gadol, every Kohen Gadol was anointed with a Shemin HaMishcha. Adkan, that's the end of that discussion. The Gemara now goes back to the Aron. So this is now the second half of the yesterday's daf, where the Gemara now is going to give us some details about the Aron. First of all, dimensions. What are the dimensions of the Aron? So the Torah is very clear. The Torah tells us that it's 2.5 amas by 1.5 amas. So there really shouldn't be a debate in terms of what the dimensions are, and there is a debate in terms of what the dimensions are. So how do we arrive at that conclusion? How could there possibly be a debate? So we generally know that when we measure an amma is basically the distance from your elbow to the top of your middle finger. So that's generally speaking what an amma is, somewhere in the range of 1.5 to 2 feet. But in terms of halacha, they generally say the amma is 6 tefachim. Meaning, and again, this is all part of halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, it's all part of the oral tradition, that an amma is generally speaking 6 tefachim. So you could take your fist and basically it'll go up 6 times from your elbow to the top of your finger. Okay? Doesn't have to, but that's generally speaking how these linear measurements are perceived. However, when it comes to the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan, so now we have a machlokas. It's a machlokas tonight between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. How long is an amma? Now this is going to make a big difference, meaning that the tefach is a constant measurement. We know that a tefach is, again, the distance of an average fist. It's, you know, there's some standardized form of what that is. Let's say 4 inches, just for the purposes of simplicity, but that's probably oversimplifying. But, okay, so it's 4 inches. So in other words, so an amma is 6 times 4 inches. So 24 inches. Okay, 2 feet. Again, I'm not issuing any type of halachic psak. I'm just speaking so that we can all understand. According to some Tanayim, when you're building the Beis HaMikdash, you take out a different amma measurement. Not the 6 tefach amma measurement, but you take out the 5 tefach amma measurement to build the Beis HaMikdash. So, every amma now is going to be 5 tefachim. So instead of being 24 inches, it'll be 20 inches. So now, we're going to have a machlokas in terms of what the dimensions of the Aron are. Because according to the Tanayim, we say that it's 6 tefachim. So now, 2.5 amma is going to be 6 times 2 is 12, plus another 3. It's going to be 15 tefachim long. According to other Tanayim, no. You're going to take out your 5 tefach amma. So 2 times 5 is 10, plus another 2.5, 12.5 tefachim long. And that's just the length. The width, obviously, same basic story. So now, with all this stated, we're going to debate in terms of what the dimensions of the Aron are. And based on this debate, we're also going to have another debate in terms of what went inside the Aron. Meaning it's just a question of what can fit inside the Aron. Well, that's not the only question. But in other words, we're going to see that based on this machlokas, it's going to be another machlokas in terms of what actually went in. Okay, that was all by way of an overview of the Gemara coming up ahead. Let's see it inside. Amar of Yochanan. So it's interesting. The Gemara is going to bring this down as both a machlokas Tanaim and a machlokas Amarayim. Meaning the Tanaim involved who were debating Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, and on top of that, there was a later generational machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of who we follow like. Now it's interesting. Of course, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, well after the Churban Habayis, so there, I mean, truth of the matter is, so is Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Okay, obviously, I don't know if it's obvious, but it must be an antiquated machlokas that they're just simply brought to us by Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda and Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. I'm Rav Yochanan ba'am shishat tefachim haya Aron asui. Mantan ba'am shishat tefachim Rav Meir. So the Gemara says Rav Yochanan says the Amma 6 tefachim, followed by Rav Meir, not followed by, but preceded by Rav Meir, who also said that was 6 tefachim. Did not learn to the mission Rav Meir Amar kol Amma zayu bebeinonis. The Amma that was used was a beinonis Amma, was an average Amma, meaning 6 tefachim. Rav Yehuda Amar Amma zabinu shisha shokelim chamisha. Rav Yehuda says that when you build the actual edifice, you use the 6 tefach amma. When you're building the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, you use the 5 tefach amma. Al dati the Rav Meir do amar ba'ama shavav tefachim haya Aron asur arko shal Aron tezvav tefachim. And now the Gemara is just simply going to go through the dimensions. So based on Rav Meir, when I'm using the 6 tefach amma, so it comes out that the length of the Aron is 15 tefachim, as I explained a couple of minutes ago. Dichtiv amasayim v'chetzi arko. So and the Gemara just simply goes through the math. So the Torah says that it's 2.5 in length. Amasa shisa v'amasa shisa. So that's 6 plus 6. Upaga amasa plus another 3. So, upaga amasa tlasa. Fine. So that's the dimensions of the length of the Aron according to Rav Meir / according to Rav Yochanan. The arba luchos hayubo. Now, how many luchos went in? So, 4. 4? Yeah, 4. Two of the broke, and 2 of the ones that Moshe made. So, shnaim shlemim, shnaim shvurim. Dichsiv ha-sheshibarta v'samta ma'aron aluchos hayu kol echad v'echad. Now, how big was the actual the luchos? So the length of it was 6 tefachim rechvo shalosh. So it was 6 tefachim by 3 tefachim. Shisha v'tein arkan shel luchos arkan shel aron. So now what you'll do is you will put it lengthwise in the aron. So now, in other words, if we can just imagine, right, you have a diagram, right? Right, comes with diagram, good. So so just imagine now that we're putting the long side against the width of the Aron. So now it's, each luach is 3 after 3 after 3 after 3. That's a total now of 12. I'm going along the length of the Aron. So 12 tfachim are occupied by the luchos. Nishtar sham shosha tfachim, obviously leaving over a remainder of 3. So tein mehem chasi tefel chol kosel. First of all, we have to account for the width of the wall, right? In other words, the measurement of 2.5 is from outside edge to outside edge. So obviously we're talking about the interior space of the Aron. So we have to account for the width of the wall. The Gemara says the width of the wall is only chasi tefach. It's only half a tefach. So that takes up a full tefach. Nishtar shnei tefachim. Leaving me over now to tefachim interior. L'sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is placed inside the Aron. Rach vosha Aron. Good. So that was now the length of the Aron. Okay? So it's from end to end. Take out a tefach for the wall. So it's 3, 3, 3, 3. That is the width of each one of the luchos, 4 in total put in. That makes 12. And 2 tefachim left over for a Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah was rolled and placed into the Aron. Sefer Torah, presumably, that Moshe wrote. Rach Vosha Aron. Now we're going to do the width of the Aron. So Tisha tefachim comes out to be 9 tefachim dechsev ama vechetze rachbo amasa ashisa. Upagus amasa tlasa. So now to get to the width, so it's 9 tefachim. The Gemara says that we first look at the Torah. The Torah describes it as an amma and a half. Amma and a half, each amma is six tefachim. Half an amma is 3 tefachim. 6 plus 3 equals 9. The arba luchos hayubo, shnaim shleimim v'shaim shvurim. Now you put the luchos in. Now the luchos, as we already mentioned, was from top to bottom, 6 tefachim. Dechsev asher shibat v'sam temaram. Aluchos hayukol echa v'echa rakan shisha tefachim. The luach, each luach is 6 tefachim, v'rachvan shisha tefachim, and 6 tefachim wine. Ten rachvan shaluchas, v'rachvan shal'aron, ishtayisham shosha tefachim. So now what's left over, we're now doing the width of the aron. So the width of the aron is total 9. We put in the luchos in, which stretches out 6 tefachim. So that leaves 3 tefachim remaining. Chasi tefachim mikan lakosu v'zeh, chasi tefachim mikan lakosu zeh. So first of all, again, you have to count for the wall. The wall is a half a tefach, so that takes up a full tefach. Utfachayim l'shilut makom shesefer Torah munach. And in terms of what do we do with the last two tefachim, shilut makom, meaning just a little bit of space, right? Another, so you can put your hands in, you can take your hands out. Fine. That is all according to Rav Yochanan. Okay, so what do we have in our safe? What do we have in our aron? Dimensions of the aron are in tefachim. 15 by 9, and what fits into the Aron, all 4 luchos that Moshe, the original luchos and that Moshe broke, and the new luchos that Moshe carved, plus the Sefer Torah, okay, and fitting into the Aron perfectly, with a little bit of space on the width side. Rabbi Shimon Malakish Amar Bama Bas Chamisha Tfachim Haya. Now we're going to do all this again, but now based on the other dimension, meaning instead of taking my 6 tefach amma to measure for the aron, we'll take out our 5 tefach measurement. So we're going to do the whole thing again, but obviously we're working with a smaller space. So first of all, Rish Lakish is following the shita of Rav Yehuda, who says that for the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, I use 5 tefach amma, not a 6 tefach amma. The Tanin and Taman Rav Yehuda mer amma sabinya shishal shal kalim chamisha, the ahin aron clay klihu, and the aron is a kli. So al dated Rav Yehuda do amar ba amar shal chamisha tefachim hayarko asu ishne masar tefach umechsa. The Gemara just goes, right, the Gemara could be more concise about this, but the Gemara goes through every one of the dimensions again. The length of the amas, 2.5 amas, 2.5 amas, in 5 tefach amma measurements, comes out to 12.5. Amasa chamisha v'amasa heo, pagos amasa treo palig, v'daluchos hayubo shneim shleimim shleim shavurim. Dechsev asher shibartu v'samtim ba'arim v'aluchos hayikol echa v'echad arkan shisha tefachim. Now the dimensions of the luchos do not change. They are a constant. So the length of the aron is a variable based on who you follow, whether you follow like Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda. But the luchos themselves are a constant 6 tefachim, v'rachman shisha tefachim, so tein arkan shal luchos arkan shal aron, v'yishtar yisham chasi tefach. So now you're going to put in the 4 luchos. Now the 4 luchos, again, go from end to end. We're talking now about the length. The luchos are 3 tefach plus 3 tefach plus 3 tefach plus 3 tefach. So that's 12. So that just fits. In fact, as the Gemara is about to point out, it's a perfect fit. Because we're going to now have a half a tefach remaining, and that half a tefach is going to count for a wall. Now, the wall, according to Reish Lakish slash Rabbi Yehuda, is only going to be a quarter tefach thick. So that now the two walls on the two sides are going to be half a tefach. Etzba lakosel mikan ve'etzba lakosel mikan. Now, a quarter of a tefach is equivalent to an etzba. It's the same thing. So, roch v'sha aron, that is all the length of the aron. Now we're going to do the width. Roch v'sha aron, shif shesh tefach u'mechsa, the width comes out to being 7.5. The Gemara says, "Dichsiv ama vechetzi rechbo amasa vechamisha pagos amsa treu palik." Because the Torah describes the width of the aron as being ama vechetzi, which is using your five tefach measurement, 5 plus 2.5, which is 7.5. So now, once again, we're going to put the aron in, and going along the width, it's going to go 6 tefachim across, leaving a 1.5 tefach space. But it's not really 1.5. Because that's what kosam mikan, that's what kosam mikan. Chasi tefach mikan, vechasi tefach mikan. L'shilut makom, l'shilut. Okay, and then that would leave over one tefach area distributed. So I guess it's a half a tefach on the upper side and a half a tefach on the lower side, and that's it. Okay, the big difference, aside from the size difference, the big difference between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of the Aron is the Sefer Torah. Correct. According to Rav Yochanan, the Sefer Torah is in the Aron. According to Reish Lakish, the Sefer Torah is outside the Aron. That's a huge difference between the two Shitas. Now the Gemara takes us off on a little bit of a, it's not a tangent, we're still talking about the Aron. How did Betzalel make the Aron? So Rabbi Chanina, Amar Shal Shtevas Asu Shtayim Shal Zav V'Acha Shal Eitz, Nasan Shal Zav V'Shal Eitz V'Shal Eitz V'Shal Zahav. So the Aron was a composite of three boxes, gold, inside of the gold, wood, inside of the wood, gold. So it was a composite, so that basically from the outside and from the inside it was gold, with a wood frame, all right? Maybe it was there to add durability to the aron, but that's a guess on my part. I really don't know that to be so. Vitzipo. And now, if you're looking at it from the top, you're going to see the three layers. Meaning, as you're looking at the top edge of the aron, you'll be able to see three layers. The Torah doesn't want us to see three layers. The Gemara wants to see gold on all sides. That's where the Torah says vitzipito so zahav tahor. That's why the Torah says vitzipisa. You're going to plate the very edge so that when you're looking at it from the edge, you're not going to see three layers. You'll only see one. Mi baisa mechutz. Ma titzapenu lavis faso halyona. So the titzapenu requirement of the Torah is to tell us that that edge has to be also plated with gold, so it looks from gold from all edges. So according to our first opinion in the Gemara, the Aron was actually a composite. It was not all gold. The menorah was all gold. That the Torah says miksha zahav. But when it comes to the Aron was not all gold. It was gold inside of wood inside of gold. Okay, and the edge was plated so that it looks like it was all gold. Rabbi Shimon Malakish Amar Teva Achas Asav Vitzipah Dechsi Vitzipisa Oso Zahav Tahor Mibaisa Mechutz. So according to Reish Lakish, he disagrees. He says that the whole thing was constructed of gold. So Ma'atam Alamet Tzapenu. So the Gemara asks what seems to be an excellent question, meaning now why plating? Meaning if it's all gold, it's all gold. So Amar Pinchas Lavi Bein Nesel Neser between the boards. Now exactly what that means, I'm not sure. To be honest, I don't know what it means between the boards. Meaning, if it's all gold, so what does that mean? It means that it was built with boards in the
connected the space.
A space.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, you put two things together.
In other words, they were gold bars placed one next to another. I'll tell you what. How about this? I don't know. That's easy. it's the easiest way to say it. I'm not sure what exactly this means, but anyway. And finally, it's a lot of Gemara. Anyone? Am I the only one who noticed it? Just a lot. Kate said, it's great, but it's just, in the time constraints, it's a lot. Kate said, Hayu aluchos ksuvim. How were the luchos written? Okay, so in other words, let's try to give ourselves some sort of visual of the luchos. So Rav spoke here a couple years ago, I don't know, it feels like a couple, about the, right on Shavuos, in terms of the shape of the luchos. So in every artist's depiction, you can come to my house, you can see. So we have the curved luchos on the very top. So that is, the Rav was arguing, that is, the Rav was quoting, he quoted the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe says, what was a great line? What was the line? It was, how great a line is it if I can't remember? Hopefully it'll come back to me. Anyway, that's, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says that it couldn't be further from the truth, meaning that it was not curved on the top, it was rectangular in shape. I mean, look, from our Gemara, it's clear that it was a rectangular ship, because we're talking about fitting the luchos into a rectangular box. So, from our Gemara, it seems very clear that the shape of the luchos was rectangular and not with the curvature on the top. Where does that come from? I don't know. Artist depiction, but anyway. Our issue is going to be a simple one. The dibros, how were they written on the luchos? Now, we know the two luchos. We all have it in our minds, right? If I asked everyone to create a mental picture, or to take their mental picture and put it on paper, so you're going to have five luchos written on one and five luchos written on the other. You walk into any shul, you walk into any school, that's what you're going to see. The Gemara says over here, nah, not that simple. I mean, that will be one opinion, but that will only be just one opinion. So hayu luchos ksuvim. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Amr chamisha luchze v'chamisha luchze. Okay, so we satisfy the first opinion in the Gemara. I mean, it's a logical assumption, because why have two luchos? I'll have two luchos because I'll divide. Half the dibros on one, half the dibros on the other. There are 10 dibros in total. Good. But that's only one opinion, and it does not seem to be the majority opinion. No. 10 dibros on one luch, 10 dibros on the other luch. Each luch had all asteros of dibros. The question, which I don't have an answer for, is, according to this opinion, why two luchos? Okay, I'll say it again. I don't know. But I guess we'll find out. In other words, the asteros of dvarim seems to be like a unit. The 10 are a unit. So therefore, you can't break it up. So put 10 on one side, put 10 on the other side. So Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, here we go, more opinions. Did you think? There were two more opinions. Esrim aluch zeh, esrim aluch zeh. 20 on one and 20 on the other. Now what does that mean, 20 on one? How many dibros are there? I thought there were only 10. There are only 10. But 10 on one side, 10 on the other side of each of the luchos. So dechtiv vayichtavim ashne luchos avanim vayichtavim, and we wrote them al shne luchos avanim esrim aluch zeh v'esrim aluch zeh. So it's 20 on each side. So could there possibly be another opinion? Yes, there is. Rabbi Simai Amar abayim aluch zeh v'abayim aluch zeh, 40 on each. Because if you think about it, the luchos are, in other words, we again in our Charlton Heston view of the luchos. So. I mean, the mill did a good job, but I'm just saying it. You know, it gives us a certain picture which may not be accurate.
It was 4 and 6.
All right.
It was 4 and 6.
So it's the luchos are now rectangular. It may be rectangular in shape, but it's a, in other words, each one of the sides is equal. So we're going to have each on each side of the luchos. We're going to have the aseres and dibros written. So it comes out to 40. So 40 on each one of them. Arbeim aluch zeh dechsev mizeh mizehim ksevim. So tetroga from the word tetra, 4. So Chananya ben Achai, Rabbi Yoshua Omer ben Kol Dibra v'Dibra diktukel v'yosia shel Torah. Okay, the Rav Sajagon was the first one who said this, but he said that what are the asteres of dibros? Meaning, it's a good question. It's a good question. So that's the Rav Sajagon already asked it. I mean, what is it? Meaning, is it we have the Torah? We have 613 mitzvos. So what are the asteres of dibros? They're kind of like highlights. They're like the best of. Like what is the asteres of dibros? So Rav Sajagon writes that what the asteres of dibros are, they're like Rashi Prakim. They're like the chapter headings of all the Torah, meaning what he then did is he fit in all the mitzvahs of the Torah under one of the Aseret HaDibros. They were like the headings of the Torah. So the statement of Rav Sajagon fits in very nicely to what the Gemara here is about to teach us. The Gemara says that underneath, being called Dibur V'Dibur, Diktukei V'Osiyoseh, all the details were written in. In other words, there's a fine print. You got to read the fine print. So in other words, you have the Aseret HaDibros, which have the 10 utterances of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then between each one, you look carefully, right? You get to read the fine print. So, Dechsiv Memulim Memulim B'Tarshish, Kiyama Rabba was like a great ocean, right? Mimulim, right? It was filled. Or the Gemara understands the word Mimulim from the word Yam. It's like an ocean. Ocean of information. Kiyama Rabba. Shema Malakish, Kadava Mati Haden Karya Hava Amar Yafalam Deni Chanani Ben Achai. Right, when he got to the pasuk, he says, "Oh, that was a good teaching." Rabbi Yoshua Mahayamazeh Bein Gal Gadol Gal Gadol Galim Kitanim, and look at an ocean, and look at the waves. Between the big waves are little waves. So, Kad Bein Kol Dibor VeDibor Dikto Stevi Yosi Al Shel Torah. And as long as we're comparing the Dibros to the Yam, so it's the same thing. Meaning the Aseres Dibros are the big waves, and then you look in between, and you're going to see the little waves in between. Am Rabbi Tanchuma, Itkashit Kome Rabbi Pinchas, Asik Rabbi Yehuda, Velo Asik Rabbi Meir. He says, I really like Rabbi Yehuda's Pshat. In other words, again, we're going back now to the dimensions of the Aron. And what was in the Aron? So it comes out that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Luchos were in the Aron, but not the Torah. Torah was outside the Aron. My time in the Rabbi Yehuda, Dichsiv, Lakocha Sefer Torah, Zeva Samta Mosel, Mitzan Aron Bris Hashem. And the Torah actually says to place the Torah outside the Aron. Perfect.
On what?
It doesn't say, but it's outside.
But the thing is, when Bezalel finished making everything, the Torah hadn't been finished written yet.
So okay, another issue. Good issue, but another issue. Al dated Rav Yehuda du Amar Eichen Hava Sefer Torah Nasan Kimen Gluske Asur Lo Mi Bechutz. So the Gemara describes that it was some sort of pouch sack that was placed right outside the Aron, and that's where the Sefer was Torah. That's where the Sefer Torah was placed, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now let's go back to Rav Meir. Let's see if we can defend Rav Meir. And what are you going to put in the Aron? So we go back to Parshas Truma, the beginning of Parshas Truma, and you're going to put into the Aron es ha'edus asher etein alecha. Edus is a reference, presumably, to the Sefer Torah. So al dat d'Rameir du Amar in Mukta Mamucha b'Torah Ela v'al Aron titenes ha'idus asher ten alecha achar kach v'nasatas ha'kaparas al ha'aron milamala. So according to Rameir, we're gonna have to marshal in the rule of in Mukta Mamucha b'Torah, because it sounds like that after the Aron was placed in, the lid was placed on top. According to Rameir, not necessarily, meaning first the Torah was in and then the lid was placed on top. So he will marshal in the rule of in Mukta Mamucha b'Torah. And finally, we did well, but we haven't gotten to today's daf. And I can't be accused of reading slow today. Just give me one more moment. So, Rabbi Pinchas b'shem Rabbi Shem Malakish, Torah Shadassan Lakosh Baruch Lamoshe Nasatalo Eish Levana Charusa Be'eish Shchara. So, famous Gemara. I've heard this Gemara already a number of times, a number of different shiurim, a number of different contexts. The Gemara Yerushalmi says that we try to identify the Luchos, so it was black fire imposed on white fire. Eish muvlelos be'eish chatsuva me'eish v'nasuna be'eish. And it is mixed fire, hewn fire, given in fire. Dechsiv mimino eish das lamo. We go to the end of the Sefer Torah, Parshas V'zos HaBracha, and describing the Torah describes itself as eish das Lama, Kosh Baruch Hu gave it from his right hand, Kaviyachol, Eishdas, a fiery law. Okay, on the simplest level, speaks to the spiritual nature of the Torah. Depth, there's a tremendous amount of depth to this Gemara. Not me, not now. Yes, Danny.
Do you know the depth of the Lucha? We only have two measurements. It's like three dimensions.
No, in other words, it was 3 by 3 by 3 and 6 and 6 long. That seems to be the dimensions of the Luchos. Right, in other words, correct. It comes out, right, according to both Rameir and Rav Yehuda now, / Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, how wide are the walls? According to the first opinion, Rav Yochanan, they were half a tefach thick, and yes, and according to Reish Lakish, they're only a quarter of a tefach and espa thick. Okay, good. That takes us through the end of yesterday's daf. Perfect, we're ready. We're ready for today's daf. Oh, I'm going to be so excited when we get to Yuma. I think what I just read alone today will make up 2 to 3 blot of Yuma. Okay, you can do the word count. You can see if I'm right. But wow. Heichan ayu shtachavos ha'elu. So now, what do we say in the first Mishnah of the sixth Perek? So we talked about the 13 Shofros. We talked about the 13 Shulchanos. We didn't really talk about it. The Mishnah mentioned it. And we talked about the 13 Ishtachavayas. We talked about the 13 balance. Now, what's that? So, that's the Gemara's question. I'm sorry, that's the Mishnah's question. Apologize. Picture's worth 1,000 words. Take a look at the Azara, the temple courtyard. This is actually the temple courtyard, meaning this area over here. These walls over here are Sharni Kana, that's the Nicanor Gate. That is the eastern entrance into the Azara. So the Kedusha Sa'azara goes from here to here, from here to here. This is Ezra Sanashim. It's called the women's courtyard. When it's not, it was not exclusive to women. It's just that women, generally speaking, did not go beyond this point. So therefore, this was referred to as the Ezra Sanashim. A wall was built around the entire area. And as the Mishnah is about to point out, that this Mishnah should sound very familiar because basically, in Masechta Midos, we did the exact same thing. We went through the actual gates. There are four gates to the north. Now, again, in your mind, just switch everything around. This is the north, that's the south, that's the east, that's the west. Okay, why they did this, I don't know, but we've gone over this before. There are four entrances from the north, four entrances from the south, two to the west, and one to the east.
Five
is what I want.
Where is east?
Arba, Bedara, no, we have four over here mentioned. Okay. I apologize. We're not talking about these entrances over here. I apologize. We're talking about the ones going into the Azara. Okay, now we're good. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you. Right? 2 over here. And there's going to be 3 over here. Oh, that's better. Well, that's better because that's the numbers that we want. Because we want to go to a total of 13. Okay. So let's see all this inside. The Gemara now, the Mishnah itself is going to go. And basically, the idea is that once you pass an entrance of the Azara, and once you see the inside of the Azara, Hishtachavaya, you have to bow down. Bowing down as a sense of kavod, as a sense of teferis, meaning the splendor. You're seeing the splendor of the Azara. So you need to bow down. That's the 13 Hishtachavayas that are mentioned in the previous Mishnah. Our Mishnah now, the second Mishnah of the sixth Perek, is just simply going to go through every one of the entrances. So, Hechana Hishtachavayas, Ha'il Arba, B'tzofam Varba, Darun Shalosh, B'zmizrach, U'beiz B'marav, Kenege Shloshesar Sharim, Deromim Smuchim Lamarav. So here the Mishnah goes. It's the same Mishnah as we've done in Masechta Midos. So they are. We're now working our way. We're doing the southern, and we're starting from the west. So here. So they are Shar Elyon, Shar Delk, Shar Bechor, Shar Hamayim. Please forgive me. I'm not going to go through each one of the entrances and the name and what it represents. That's homework for tonight. V'lamanikro Shar Hamayim. The only one the Mishnah is going to just spend a little bit of time doing is the Shar Hamayim. Why is that referred to as Shar Hamayim? Shabo machtisim suche shol nisuch hamayim bechal. It's through this entrance that the water on Sukkot is brought into the Azara. The water was collected from outside, brought in through this gate, and it is the shortest path to get to the Mizbeach. Mizbeach is over here, and they're going to pour the water on the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. So that is the entrance. That's why it's called Shar Hamayim. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Bo Amayim Mefachim Vasin Elios Yotzim Mitachas Miftan. That's where the water is going to exit in the future Beis HaMikdash. We will be talking about the stream of water. Probably not today, hopefully tomorrow, the stream of water that comes out of the Beis HaMikdash in the future. We're going to quote Pesukim from Yechezkel. That'll be coming up later on. Now we're going to go to the north, over here, right on this picture, the bottom entrances. Smuchim Bamarv, and again, we're going to start from the west, and we're going to go from the west towards east. And they are Shar Yechanya, Shar Karman, Shar Anashim, Shar Hashir. Where the Mishnah is only going to sit on one of the entrances. This is Shar Yechanya. Why is this one referred to as Shar Nechanya? So Shabbat Yatsu Yechanya Begalus, because that's where Yechanya was taken out of Yerushalayim, taken out of the Beis HaMikdash when he was sent into exile. Now, if you go back to what we learned earlier this morning, right? Rewind in your mind, or on the tape, either way. The succession of kings after Yoshiyahu, it was Yehoahaz, Yehoakim, Yechaniah, and then Sidkiyahu. So the Yechonya was the grandson of Yoshiyahu, so he was exiled. After Nebuchadnezzar exiled him, he then set up Sidkiyahu as a puppet governor of the Jewish people. So, but Yechonya, the exile Yechonya, marked really one of the end points of the Bais Rishon. So he was taken out through that gate, and that gate was called, referred to as Shar Yechonya. Shebemizrach. Now we go to the east. We're over here. So Shar Nikarna v'shnei pishpashim ayulo echa miyimino v'echa mismolo. So there were three ways to get in. One was through the main opening, that was Shani Kanor, the Mishnah Yuma, which we'll see later on. That was donated by a man by the name of Nikanor, therefore it was called Shani Kanor. And there were two entrances along the sides, the north and south side of the Shani Kanor gate. With going back to Midos, we described, I think Masechta Tamid, we described how they would go in through the side entrances and open up these gates from the inside. Ushnaim b'mar v'lo hayushla shein. There were two entrances on the west, and they go by no name. These are no name entrances, okay, and probably because of lack of use. Masnisa Nabiyusa ben Yochanan Haya da Amar Keneged Yud Gimel Sha'arim. So the Gemara says, now how many entrances were there? So 13. Now, in other words, obviously that's what the Mishnah just said. That's what we just went through. What the Gemara is going to note is this is a machlokas. Now, of all the machlokasim out there, this to me is one of the more interesting ones because hard to imagine we're debating how many entrances and gates there were to the base, to the Azara, meaning this was a Beis Hamikdash. What are we arguing? So, sorry to throw out so many questions this morning that I don't know the answer to, but again, I'm not really clear why there's an argument in terms of how many entrances there were to the Azara. Maybe, I'm simply speculating. Maybe some of these gates were closed over the course of time, and perhaps, but I simply don't know. But it's a machlokas. Machlokas in terms of how many entrances there were into the Azara. Barim Karabat and Shiva Sharim Avu Bazara. So there were 7 entrances into the Azara, not 13. And so the Gemara now is going to ask an interesting question. So if you take that position that there are only 7 entrances into the Azara and not 13, so where would you bow 13 times? Now, couldn't the answer just simply be, you don't bow 13 times? Meaning if you're arguing over the number of entrances, it could very well be that you're arguing over the number of times you're going to bow. Maybe you only bow 7 times. The Gemara does not answer that, and it's therefore clear from the Gemara that 13 is an objective number. In other words, there is a Masorah, there's a tradition that there's 13 bowings done as you go around the Azara. So if it's not corresponding to the number of entrances, so that 13 must represent some other number. So the Gemara says, "Hayishtachavos halalu ki ahide tanina taman yigimel process hayibosha parsa macha yavan." Okay, it's beautiful. Today's the first day of Kislev, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and now we speak Chanukah. Chanukah talk. So Yavan, the Greeks, when they took over the Beis Hamikdash, the second Beis Hamikdash.
This reminder, they said only down in the Beis Medrash and in Rabbi Shaket's Shia. That was Rabbi Shaket and Rabbi Hoffman today. They'll be davening in the main shul.
Hayu Bosha Partsa Machayavan. So that's when the Greeks come in and they made pirtsos. In other words, they made openings in the walls of the Azara. When the Chashmonaim came and they rededicated the Beis Hamikdash, so they took those 13 entrances that were opened by the Yevanim and they closed them up. The Gazru connect them Yudgemoy Shachavayos, and as a way of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Hatzalah, for the salvation that we received on Hanukkah, so every time we pass one of those entrances that were closed by the Chashmonaim, so we bow as a way of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now here we go. Okay, from this point going forward, I'm going to have to stop somewhere in the middle. But from this point going forward, now we're going to quote Psukim from Zechariah and Yechezkel. You want good preparation for tomorrow? I'm speaking to myself also. So read through chapters 13 and 14 of Zechariah. And read chapter 47, Yechezkel. In these chapters, the Nevi'im are forecasting the next Beis HaMikdash. The end of Sefer Yechezkel goes through basically in detail the third Beis HaMikdash, as is Zechariah as well. And basically what we're going to be learning in the Gemara over the course of the rest of the daf and into tomorrow's daf, is that there was a stream of water that eventually will emerge from the Beis HaMikdash, actually starting from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, a trickling of water, which then is going to grow and grow and grow, until basically it's going to be a river emanating out of Yerushalayim. And we're going to see over the course of the Gemara, just I say this by way of introduction, we're going to see over the course of the Gemara that the stream of water is going to go forth, it's going to go into the Yam HaMelech, it's going to go into the Yam HaGadol, and basically and it's going to sweeten the waters, it's going to produce fish, and basically we're going to get a little bit of a picture of what to expect La'asid Lavo when the Melech HaMashiach comes. Your chapters, okay, Zechariah, Perakim, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, 13 and 14, Zechariah, and Yecheskel, Mem Zayin, 47th chapter of Yecheskel. That's your prep work for tomorrow. That's my prep work as well. Okay, Ad Kan, Erev Chodesh Tov to everybody.